So the idea behind this podcast is to chat with all sorts of people who are connected to long distance walking, from the walkers and runners tackling LDWA challenge events to the volunteers who keep everything going smoothly, along with anyone else who plays a part in the wider world of outdoor walking. We're starting with Simon Hodgin from Norfolk and Suffolk Group. He's been involved for some time now in walking social and challenge events, as well as volunteering to support them. And this year he was on the 2025 Flower of Suffolk 100 organising committee, as well as walking the Marshalls event. So my first question to you is, what or who got you involved in long distance walking?
I think that's quite obviously through Jane, my then partner, now wife. She was already involved in the LDWA. She in turn was influenced by her dad, Brian, who I believe is one of the original members of the LDWA. And it was completely new to me. It was something that I'd not come across before. And it's quite incredible. It opened my eyes to a number of things, really, not just the getting out in the fresh air, the challenge, the walk, the distance, but the people, the camaraderie. It's very unique. But I can absolutely say that had it not been for my now wife, Jane, I probably wouldn't have even known about the LDWA, which has been a real shame.
So you didn't initially realise just how far you would end up walking on this. You just thought it was a nice little walk in the countryside initially?
Yeah, I mean, Jane had told me about she'd been involved in hundreds before. And I think what knocked me out was just before we got together, she'd attempted 100. And in her words, she'd failed only getting to 83, 84 miles, which kind of blew my mind at the time. I was kind of thinking, well, that's not a failure. You know, anyone that can walk 83, 84 miles, that's quite incredible. And that kind of opened my mind to the challenge of the events and the distance of the events. But I obviously didn't start with the hundreds. I was introduced to it through social walks. I think it was a North Yorkshire walk, was one of the first ones we ever did, which had been a 26 miler. But my initial view was to just try it, get involved. Jane was very enthusiastic, her dad was, and through Jane got to meet a number of people that also were very involved, much involved with it. But initially it was just about just giving it a go, just trying it, go to a social walk, then challenge events and just give it a go. So it was not about the distance at first. That was kind of back in my mind. It was more about initially social walks and then on to my first challenge event.
Did you find your first social walk quite tough?
Not particularly. I mean, I think it was, from memory, it was 18, 20 miles. I probably did a bit, actually, because prior to that, I guess if you think about it, the furthest I'd probably walked was 8 or 10 miles. So all of a sudden, you're kind of almost doubling the distance. Probably without thinking about it, not too tough, but you know, it wasn't a walk in the park. Let's put it that way. You know, it was when you're suddenly on your feet for a good number of hours and you're not used to it, then it was a little bit different. And yeah, something of a challenge in itself. I wouldn't have said it was too hard, but it was certainly a challenge to start with. It's something that my body wasn't used to.
So talking about challenge events, you've now completed quite a lot of those around the country. What do you look for in the challenge event? What do you hope to see or do on the challenge event now?
I think there's probably a number of things, really. I mean, I like the variety of walking in different parts of the UK. And I think one of the things that myself and Jane do now is when we look at the events that are advertised through us at iEntries, what we're looking for is something that either we've done before and we've enjoyed, or something that we've a walk that we've never done before and we quite fancy doing it, you know, to see different parts of the country, a different terrain. So that's an important part of it. And then I guess from my point of view, if I'm looking at challenge events, it splits two way with me, really. And it's a personal choice. Sometimes I'll do it with Jane and I'll do it with friends and it's almost an extension of a social walk. And sometimes I just want to, as the title suggests, I want to challenge myself and push myself in terms of timings, you know, to improve my timings. and work on my fitness. And most of the time nowadays, they're an extension of a social walk, which I really enjoy. But it's just the variety of different terrains, different walks across the UK. It's opened my eyes to a large part of the UK that I thought I knew, but really I didn't. When you drive past somewhere, or you stay somewhere in a hotel overnight, you're not really experiencing different parts of the country. When you're walking 26 miles, you're walking 30 miles, you're walking 50 miles, you absolutely are experiencing different parts of the country. And that's a huge part of the attraction to me, certainly.
So I know there's a lot more to the LDWA at challenge events than food, but what's the meal that you hope to see at the end of a challenge event, or indeed a long it as well?
Yeah, well, I think a long it is easy. It's just a variety. And I think over the years, the events I've been involved with, I think each LDWA group gets that, and you get a nice variety of kind of snacks along the way, whether it be sugar based or salt based. And I guess depends on what your body's craving at the time, you'll enjoy either or both. When you're talking about what I'd enjoy at the end of an event, and this is I sometimes get told it's a northern thing. I actually don't think it is, but I quite enjoy things like steak pie, meat pies, things like that, you know, proper old fashioned meal. I'm all for vegetarian meals for those that want it. But for me, it's still something that gives me a bit of substance at the end of 26 or 30 or 50, 100 miles. That's what I look forward to.
Well, just from my perspective, that's not just the northern thing. And a steak pie at the end, oh, that's delicious. A reward for all of the effort that have gone through.
Absolutely.
You said, we know you've done lots of challenge events now. So what kind of distances have you done? How many of them have you done? Do any stand out?
Yeah, so I've been lucky enough now. I've entered and completed 700s. I've been lucky enough to enter and complete, blimey, in terms of 50s now. I've been walking now for 10 years. And I mean, it must be dozens of 50s that I've completed. Likewise for 30s and even more of the 26 miles. When I first started, Jane probably eased me into it a little bit. We did a few 18 milers before I picked up the 26 milers, but I've lost touch now with the number. We try and do as many as we can during a year now, as many challenge events as we can, as I say, to experience different parts of the country. So I would probably say we're averaging, I don't know, 6 or 7 challenge events a year, and then as many of the social walks that we can get to across Norfolk and Suffolk.
Do you remember what your first 50 mile event was?
Yeah, it was the Marshalls for the Shotley 50, which is probably no surprise, because the Shotley was originally designed by my now father-in-law Brian, Jane's dad. And he's been heavily involved since it started as a 26 mile route and has grown to be 50 miles over the years. And that's probably now going back to 2015 from memory. Myself, Jane, and obviously various marshals for the event from Essex and Hearts, it was, did the Shotley Marshalls 50. So that was the very first 50 that I got involved with. Yeah.
Well, Shotley is the only 50 that I've done. And at the end of it, I thought there is no possible way that I could ever walk 100. I didn't even want the sausage that was the food at the end. I had to reject that and have a sit down. It was a memorable day. I was pleased to have finished it. But on the end of your 50, on the end of your Shotley walk, did you ever think that you could do 100 miles? Because having completed 50 and suffered, it just felt like a ridiculous extra amount. But how does your mind take that?
So that's interesting. So the first 50 did save the Shotley. I felt quite bullish at the end of it. It was the first time I'd walked 50 miles. I'd be misleading if I said there weren't bits of it that, you know, I felt a bit tough, because it was all breaking through some mental hurdles of going past 30 miles, then 40 miles, and then aiming for the 50, 51 miles that the route involved. But I was actually quite bullish at the end of that. However, my second 50 event was the Bullock Smithy in the Peak District, which is the a number of people will have heard of it, but that's a 56 mile route that takes you across some lovely Peak District countryside, which starts in the middle of the day. So you're forced to walk through the night and arrive back the following morning in Hazel Grove. That one, I must admit, given there's a lot more climbs, a lot more descents involved, it was obviously an overnighter. I remember thinking when I got to the end of that one, it was you get a breakfast at the end of it, and I'd walk 56 miles. And I do remember thinking, could I really get up and effectively walk the same distance again? When suddenly I had to stand up and walk about, I don't know, 800 metres back to my car. And that seemed in itself an ask. And it did cross my mind then, you know, could I possibly actually do 100, which was effectively getting up and doing more or less the same distance again. And the message that was passed back to me then, which kind of resonates to this day, was it's a mental thing. And if you know that you're involving yourself in a 100 mile event, you should physically and mentally pace yourself for it. If you're going out to do a 30 or a 26 or a 50, you should pace yourself both mentally and physically for it. And I guess that kind of stuck with me. But if I was to say at the end of that second 50, the Bullock Smithy, if I was bullish then about doing 100 miles, the answer is yeah, I had some reservations. I did have some reservations before I actually entered my first 100, yeah.
So now you have completed, how many hundreds have you completed?
I've done 7 now.
And all successful ones?
All successful, yeah. Yeah.
That's very impressive. So do you have any advice for somebody who might have completed their first 26 or 30 or 50 mile event on how to approach the 100, both mentally, physically and any other way?
I think first and foremost, it's a personal choice. That you as an individual don't be pressured. You know, you join the LDWA to walk whatever distance you want to walk. So whether that just be the 18, 20 mile social walks, or you want to stop at 26 mile challenge events or 30 mile challenge events or 50 mile challenge events, that's entirely up to you. I think it's got to come from within. So I think the first advice I'd give is that if you're going to enter 100, do it because you want the challenge, you want to do it, not because you feel you have to do that. That's the wrong approach. So I guess the first advice, as I say, is you've got to want to do it. And the reason I say that is because it doesn't matter on the terrain. It doesn't matter what part of the country. It doesn't matter what the weather. Walking 100 miles it is a tough ask. It's I think sometimes people forget that. It doesn't matter how many hundreds you've done, at some point in 100 you'll have a bit of a low. So you start with that kind of voice from within saying, I really fancy trying this and giving it a go. And then when you do enter the event, as I was alluded to before, I think you've got to do your training. You know, you've got to do your social walks, you've got to do your challenge events. And the reason I say that is that when you do enter 100, you've got to be confident that you know the pace that you're comfortable with. And that's really important, because I've seen a number of people on the 100 who understandably get roped into the and sucked in by the whole kind of razzmatazz of the day. And you're with 500 other people. And eventually, you know, that bell or whistle, whatever goes, and you're away. The important thing is not to get carried along by people at a pace that you're not familiar with. You know, you've got to set your own pace. And I say that physically and mentally. It's a pace that you're comfortable with, that you know has got you around events previously and will give you a good opportunity to do 100 miles. And I think beyond that, I think the advice, and others have heard it before, is that the old comment about the first 50 is in your legs, the second 50 is in your head, is absolutely true. I think there comes a point where if you've done your training and you're a certain level of fitness, do you know what? Most people probably could do the 100 miles event. What stops them, unless they're unlucky with injury, and that can happen, but what tends to stop them is that mentally the mind tells them to stop. The mind tells them they're in too much pain. The mind tells them it can't go any further. But the body's quite incredible. The body will keep going. If you got to a reasonable level of fitness and you're walking at a pace that you're comfortable with, and you can overcome those little kind of demons in your head saying, stop, I've had enough, I'm in a bit too much pain. If you can walk through that, then I guarantee you've got a really, really good chance of doing the 100 miles. But you've got to break it down. You've got to deal with it your way. It's pointless trying to go at somebody else's pace if you're not comfortable with it. The challenge is to do 100 miles or 101 miles in 48 hours. So whether you do that in 30 hours, in 29 hours, in 47 and a half hours, it doesn't matter. You know, the idea is to achieve that 100 miles in 48 hours. So it's about mentally and physically pacing yourself, a pace that you're comfortable with, accepting that, you know, you might get some aches and pains, you might get some blisters, but just keep going. Take it checkpoint by checkpoint. Stop, have something to drink, have something to eat. Just have a rest if you need it. It's all personal. And then aim for the next checkpoint. That's how I looked at the first event I did. And it does help massively.
I must say, every time I see you on these events, you look happy and smiling. I don't know how you do that element. Have you actually ever been really close to stopping and just thinking this is just too much?
I have to say as I alluded to, anyone that walks 100 miles in 48 hours, and it doesn't matter what pace you do it at some point, your body will have a lull. And I think anyone that says it doesn't, I wouldn't believe them. And the challenge then is, and it comes with experience, I guess, is that you just keep putting one foot in front of another, and eventually you're lifted, and you will be lifted. There's no doubt about that, whether it's during that part of the walk or when you get to a checkpoint, you get something to eat or something to drink, whatever. In answer to your question, I mean, the very first 100 that I did was the Kent 100 in, would that be 2018? It was for those that did it, remember, it was a burning hot weekend, something I'd never done before. I made some mistakes on the timings. I made some mistakes on going the wrong direction. So I had a few miles to the route. It's probably going into that second night. The first two that I did where I went into the second night were you see the sunset for the second time. And I remember that first event, there was probably about an hour or two where I absolutely felt punch drunk. I felt absolutely shattered, jaded. You know, walking into the night time again, and I think, you know, that's when, in my case, it was the people I was walking with, and particularly that very first one I was with, Jane Cook, who a number of people will know. She's just this year done her 20th, so a veteran of the hundreds, and walking with somebody who's been through it before, who's just chatting to you and just keeping your mind in the game and just, you know, effectively encouraging you to just put one foot in front of the other, helps massively. So there was certainly an hour or so in that very first 100 where I did feel a bit punch drunk. My second 100 didn't start very very well, and that was the Hadrian's 100. That didn't start very well. After about 12 miles, I started feeling quite nauseous, which I'd never experienced before. I'd started the event with my Achilles playing up. That subsided, the nausea kicked in. And there was a point on that at about 46 miles when I think the decision was either I make myself sick and clear my stomach or I'm not going to finish this. So I did. It wasn't very pleasant, but it did the trick. And amazingly, as a result of that, I kind of got my energy and my mojo back, and the rest was history. You know, I felt stronger as I went into that second day than I maybe expected to. So, it's the first 200 certainly had the challenges, both mentally and physically. But as I say, if you're walking at a pace you're comfortable with and mentally you're prepared to take some pain and walk through it, then most people, if you've done your training, most people will succeed. I've no doubts about that.
I have to say, that's all very brave and determined. I'm always slightly inspired by you. Although I don't want to go too far with that. So although the 100 is a great event, you mentioned earlier, there's kind of a lot more to the LDWA, and we're known for being a volunteer-led organisation as well. So what sort of volunteering have you been involved with locally and nationally over the last few years?
Yeah, I think, just to touch on the volunteering, what really impressed me from the very first challenge event that that Jane introduced me to in North Yorkshire was the kind of the camaraderie and the spirit of not only the fellow walkers, but all the marshals that I met in the checkpoints, how supportive they were, how encouraging they were. And it really impressed me when Jane pointed out that these are all volunteers, which is quite incredible, because that really does help make the event. And it certainly helps all the walkers. And I guess I guess as a result of that, very early on in my kind of days with the LDWA, it was obvious to me that it's one of these associations that you've got to put back in what you take out. And once I was asked to get involved and volunteer, which was probably, I guess, probably about 2-3 years into my walking, it's very difficult to say no. At the time, I felt it was the right thing to do. And initially, as a member of Norfolk and Suffolk, I was helped to marshal checkpoints. So whether that was taking numbers as people came in, whether that was helping, you know, sitting people down, seeing if they needed any water or food, and just to, you know, keep them motivated as they were going through our events. That's how it all started. And then from there, I got asked and invited to get involved in the Norfolk and Suffolk Committee. I think maybe even by yourself, mate, I think you're one of the people that certainly encouraged me to get involved. And again, it's very difficult to say no when you're benefiting from the work that people, these volunteers are doing for you through the committees, through the marshalling of events. So, I mean, over the years, if you name any event that we've run in Norfolk and Suffolk, I will have marshalled it. So, you know, the Winter Popeline, the Summer Popeline, the Flower of Suffolk, and obviously, as you know, it culminated in myself being a committee member of the Flower of Suffolk 100 earlier this year, and being in the control room for the event itself, which was a kind of a unique experience. It was a kind of grandstand view of everything that was going on, but you name it, in terms of any event we do as Norfolk and Suffolk, and on top of that, given my kind of historical links with Essex and Hearts and the Shotley 50, Alan Verbally marshalled that one as well, given it's hosted right on the doorstep of where I live here in Holbrook, so I'll help out with that one as well. So I'm a big believer that if you're gonna benefit from other people's time and generosity, you've got to put back in yourself. And as we both know, one of the reasons that keeps the cost of LDWA events as economic as they are, and I believe the great value for money, is because of the work the marshals do for little and no money. And I think that's, you know, that's important, and that's, to me, it's at the heart of what we do in the LDWA. And I think anybody that gets the opportunity to be involved in marshals should do. You'll get support, and you'll really enjoy it, and it is fulfilling that you're actually, I know, in events where I'm marshalling, there are people that I'm supporting during that event will be likewise marshals and events that I do up and down the country. And I think that's a great network in that regard.
I mean, I was aware of just how much organising the 100 took from the organising committee, but also just how excited those committee members were to see so many people enjoying the event, finishing the event, seeing all of their work come to life. You had quite a little bit of a formal risk assessment thing, but you really really enjoyed seeing the result, didn't you, and people enjoying it?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if you think about it, we started talking about the event being hosted, as it turned out, in Suffolk, 4 years prior to the event. And we had some initial meetings, but I would say certainly 3 years out is when a lot of the planning started in earnest. And I think anybody that's been involved in planning any event, let alone 100, you know, and the logistics over 48 hours, you know, all the planning that goes into it and the marshals event before that, everything from the food to the transport to the risk assessment to the HQ to the checkpoints. And then, of course, you've got the route itself, you know, all the work was done, you know, building the route that Shell did for us. It's a huge amount of work. And absolutely what you're hoping for is that people turn up, that they enjoy the route, that they, you know, they enjoy the checkpoints, they're supported throughout, and they're left with a thoroughly great experience of Norfolk and Suffolk and the route that we put on in Suffolk. So when you get the feedback that we got verbally through emails and letters of people pointing out, whether it was the first 100 or the 20th 100, it doesn't matter. But when you're getting feedback from what a great route to what great checkpoints, what great marshals, what great food, and it really does it does make all that work worthwhile. It's a long time coming, a lot of stress, a lot of pressure, a lot of challenges. I think anyone that's been involved in a 100 committee will kind of recognise that. It's a big logistical event to put on. I was lucky enough to kind of, given I did the risk assessment, and given the risk assessment touches everything related to the event, as you'd expect, I was kind of privileged enough to get to see what everybody's involved with, as I say, from food to checkpoints to the route to, you know, engagement with landowners, and on it goes. You know, there's a lot of people for little and no money, mainly volunteers for no money, putting an awful lot of effort to put on what is it? I mean, you think about it, you know, an event that takes place over 48 hours. And we were there before the event and we were there after the event as well as. So it's a huge commitment. But it's done because, you know, myself and many others have enjoyed other hundreds across the country, which has been put on similarly by other volunteers and marshals from other groups. So it's a great way to put something back. And we were really proud of, you know, although I'm not a native of East Anglia, it was really great to host it in East Anglia for the first time ever.
Yeah, it was marvellous to see the 100 come to East Anglia for that first time. And also just to see how many people wanted to take part in coming to the region and seeing new parts of it.
Absolutely. So,
as a final question, from all of your social walks and challenge events, what's your funniest or favourite memory from any LDWA event?
I think on a personal level, it's kind of funny, and it's not really. I mentioned my first 100, and I remember we decided, myself and Jane Cook, got to the Norfolk and Suffolk checkpoint, and we were a lot slower than we planned to be, so we made a bit of a pact that we were going to basically put our heads down and you know, really pick the pace up for the next part of the route. So we left the checkpoint, said our goodbyes, turned left, put heads down and went for it. Went for it 2 miles in the wrong direction, so we added another 4 miles to the route. So it was kind of funny, but it's funny now, it wasn't at the time. And I guess everybody involved in walking has got similar stories of, you know, getting themselves lost or taking the wrong turning or getting themselves confused. It happens, you know, I've been doing it 10 years and, you know, GPX makes a big difference. But from time to time, even now, you know, you'll take the wrong turning or find yourself on the wrong side of a hedge or the wrong side of a stream, whatever it might be. It happens. But I think most of my memories are the funny memories, the enjoyable memories. It's just the events and the people, the achievement over the years, you know, everything that I've done and we've done. They're all great memories. They're all great memories, even the ones that are funny, the good memories.
So what's your next challenge event? Is it the lovely Muddy Stanford Stagger in the new year?
I think it is now, yeah. I think it's kind of wound down for us now until the new year, and yeah, it's almost like the first date in the calendar is the Stansted Stagger, which, as you know yourself, usually involves a lot of mud, usually quite a bit of rain, but it's a great way to start the new year. We've got Norfolk and Suffolk, we start the new year with a social walk on the 1st of January. So for those that are not too hungover from New Year's Eve, we do have a social walk, which is proving popular. But my next challenge event will be the Stansted Stagger in early January. Yeah.
And as a little plug for Norfolk and Suffolk, we have challenge events next year.
We do indeed. Yes. We've got the Winter Poppy Line, which is a qualifier for the 100. So that's taking place again in Norfolk, as it does every 2 years. So that one's in the planning stage now. So the checkpoints and the route are being finalised. So we've got that in January. So I think we're on a waiting list now. That's proving very, very popular. I also believe that we're going to be doing the Rodent Wriggle in the summer as well as. So I guess anybody that's interested in attending any of the challenge events in Norfolk and Suffolk, my plea would be, you know, keep an eye on SI entries, because there will be a number of events that we're keen to host going into 2026.
Well, thank you very much for your time, Simon, and I will be there at the Stansted Stagger doing another effectively mud walk, I think, and I'm looking forward to it. So thank you very much for your time.
Thank you very much, Julian.